Our next speaker is Maciej, and he's going to talk about us about hunting bugs. And how do we hunt bugs? We do that by sending a bunch of random input into our programs, or more scientifically called fuzzing. Round of applause.
Right, welcome. So in the spirit of testing, let's talk about fuzzing. So I'm Maciej, I'm an offensive security engineer. I've been previously a platform engineer and software engineer. I sail, climb, and play board games. So what we'll talk about? We'll talk about fuzzing. We'll talk about differential fuzzing, how it differs from fuzzing. And we'll talk about bugs that are in the standard library and how you can actually, you know, find those bugs and fix them using fuzzing. And then at the end, we'll talk about fuzzing in continuous integration pipelines. So, you know, what we'll not talk about is how fuzzing works under the hood. There are excellent resources out there that will talk about, like, fuzzing engines and, like, other stuff. I'll link to them in the end, but this talk is not about this. Why should you care? So there's an OSS fuzz project. Who is familiar with this? Cool. So this is a kind of a platform that gives open source projects compute resources to run fuzz tests continuously. And there's about 1,000 projects in there, and within a 6 or 7 years, it has found 10,000 vulnerabilities and 36,000 bugs. And if you do a simple math, that's 10 vulnerabilities per project and 36 bugs per project. So, you know, this seems like an effort that's worth investing in. So let's have, you know, let's assume we have a simple function. It accepts the string, mutates it, and gives you a transformed string back. And it transforms, you know, letters or characters in the alphabet to a character that is 13 positions later. You know, you get N for A, O for B, and B for C, and so on and so forth. So in your regular testing, you'll come up with some inputs. Put those inputs into the function, and then you'll make assertions based, you know, if the output is correct. You're all familiar with this, probably. You can run this using your, you know, standard Go CLI. With fuzzing, the situation changes a little bit. Instead of your, you know, devised input, your things you came up with, you have a random input. You put it into function and make some assertions. It looks very similar, and is supported in Go from, like, Go 1.18, and you can also run this using the CLI. You see some boilerplate around the test, but, you know, in the middle, you basically have your unit test that you had before. I intentionally left the assertion blank, because how do you assert and stuff if you don't know the input, right? If you run the fuzz test, you'll see that it tries, you know, hundreds of thousands of inputs per second in this instance, and it runs indefinitely. So you can run it as long as you want. As we've seen, it's easy to create fuzz tests if you have unit tests in place. So there is no reason not to do it, really. One thing that we haven't talked about is that, you know, it's not all magic. You still have to kind of instruct the fuzzing engine to, you know, be able to come up with inputs that make sense for your test. So you can actually reuse the inputs you use for unit tests and add them to what's called the corpus. And that tells the fuzzing engine to, you know, come up with something that's similar, but, you know, quite random as well. Yeah, add the inputs from your unit test. That helps a lot. You know, I've talked about those assertions that, you know, it might be pretty tricky to come up with them if you don't really know what the input is. So what you commonly see in fuzz tests is that they don't make any assertions. They just, you know, the engine just checks if the function crashed, which is still very efficient because it tells you that, you know, there are some out-of-bounds size accesses, for instance. But you should and can assert on invariants, those things that don't change. And in our instance, for instance, there is a property to the Roth 13 function that you can actually call it twice, and you'll get the input back. And this holds true for anything that has an inversible. So, you know, if you have an inverse function, you can make a simple assertion like this, which is just call Roth13 and Roth13, and then you expect the input back. And if it doesn't agree, it's, you know, the test fails. Some examples that are in the commonly used are encoders, decoders, marshallers, and marshallers. You can just call the things, you know, decode the encoded thing, and you should get the input back. There are other stuff, like if you do a SHA sum, for instance, you always expect it to return 32 bytes. But there is other technique. And what if you had two implementations of ROT 13, right? Something that you wrote and then, you know, something else. And that's called differential fuzzing. So basically, you get a random input, you put it through two implementations, and you see if they disagree. So, you know, think about for a moment, and like, where can we get those second implementation from? The first thing is refactoring. Let's say you have your function, but you know, I don't know, it's unreadable, maybe it's not performance enough, so you're refactoring the code for whatever reason. You can save your old implementation to the side and use it to basically reference it when you refactor the code. The second example is performance. You might maintain two implementations in the first place. For instance, you are following a specification closely, and you know, the first implementation is written very close to the spec, but it might be inefficient. But the second one is heavily optimized, but it might be not quite readable. You know, you might have some stray buffers or whatever. The third option, which is really interesting, is that there is a C library that does a similar thing. And you can use C to call it, and that's what we'll explore further. So back in January last year, I saw an interesting bug report in